Davis Van Opdorp here with Matt Ford and Felix Tamsut. An interesting match day in the Bundesliga. It's getting much closer at the top, and Leverkusen and Bremen scored 8 goals between them in their game on Sunday. By popular request, we also talk about the German Cup fixtures that are going to happen this week. But before we get to all that, we got to talk about what happened in Dortmund. So the gap at the top is now 2 points between Borussia Dortmund and Bayern Munich. That's because Borussia Dortmund drew 2-2 with Hertha Berlin, and Bayern Munich beat Mainz 2-1 away from home. But the most interesting fixture is was Hertha Berlin getting a big point away from home and in Dortmund. They have given Dortmund trouble in the past in the Olympiastadion, but away from home, Dortmund seemed to have the upper hand until on Saturday. Matt, you watched that game pretty closely. What did you see from Hertha that encouraged you?
What even Hertha that encouraged me? Yeah, the fact that they survived the early onslaught from Dortmund, the fact that they showed the resolve to come out and score goals on the break, Salomon Kalou's work rate, Mittelstädt's work up and down the left-hand side, Davy Selke coming off the bench was key in the second half. I think in hindsight, it's easy to say that Hertha came to Dortmund with a well-thought-through game plan.
They were set up very defensively.
They did, and rightly so. And Pal Dardai said in the big interview with Berlin's Morgenpost newspaper in the build-up that, yeah, despite all the plaudits Hertha have had this season for playing more of attractive football than they perhaps have done in the past, Dardai said that, yeah, going to Dortmund, though, we know what Dortmund are capable of. The key here is not to play beautiful football. We're not aiming for that. We're gonna try and win ugly, because I think the quote was, how can successful football be bad football? Hence going for 5 at the back, 2 defensive midfielders. They just set up very defensively. So in hindsight, you can say, oh, that obviously worked. But looking at the game, I think by half time, it was 1-1 at half time, but it could actually have been 4 or 5-1 to Dortmund. Jadon Sancho had 2 huge chances. He actually had the ball in the net before he scored the opening goal. It could have gone downhill pretty quickly for Hertha Berlin, especially in that first 20 minutes. But they did hold on, and ultimately they were only 1-0 down, which enabled Kalou to get that first equaliser. So I think they were actually quite fortunate there. In the second half, they were much more impressive. I thought there was a lot more stability about them. And I think ultimately, especially after the substitution of to bring in Davy Selke, who then won the penalty which led to the equaliser, a more than deserved point.
Yeah, Felix, Borussia Dortmund have impressed in the Champions League, but in the Bundesliga against some of these lower to mid-table teams, they seem to ship a lot of goals. Hertha Berlin, of course, well, not necessarily a mid-table team anymore.
I was going to say, lower to mid-table. Yeah. Hertha are still 6th.
Well, I was thinking more of Augsburg. In the Augsburg game, Augsburg scored 3 goals, equalized a couple times, took the lead a couple times in that game. And they, of course, Borussia Dortmund, without question, impressed in midweek against Atletico Madrid, but then gave 2 goals to Hertha Berlin, even though, like Matt said, at the other end, they seemed to be creating many chances. How much of a worry does this need to be for Borussia Dortmund? Because they're still unbeaten.
They are still unbeaten. And generally speaking, I think a game like the Hertha Berlin game should be taken when it comes to Borussia Dortmund's ability. That's what we should take out of this game. As Matt said, they played good football. They played the football that we've gotten used to see from them recently. They did concede those 2 goals, but I think in a way this is like a time that everything works for Hertha. So they've been very sound tactically, and they've been doing well in the league generally. But looking specifically at Dortmund, their ability has been very, very impressive and convincing, generally speaking, as it ever was. It's just a matter of getting those goals in, and I think defensively, recently, especially in the Atletico Madrid game, but generally speaking, I think Dortmund are stabilizing slowly but surely. And I don't think Dortmund can be downhearted by this game, not at all.
I think Felix is right to say slowly but surely, and we can't expect Lucien Favre to be getting absolutely everything right straight away. He's doing an awful lot right already, so I don't want to take any credit away from him. But yeah, Felix mentioned the Atletico game where I think Sal Niguez hit the bar, didn't he? The Augsburg game where they conceded three. Even the Hertha game here, Duda had a shot curled just wide. Yeah, defensive errors. Obviously, the first equaliser came from a wayward pass from Mo Dahoud. Played it straight into the path of Mittelstädt, who then obviously showed a great deal of foresight to get forward quickly and start that attack. And a really unnecessary and pointless challenge from Danek Zelzagadou in injury time on Davy Selke. I mean, okay, Selke had done him, he'd got beyond him. So I think at that point, I'm not really sure what the answer really is, but the answer is definitely not grab Selke with two arms and drag him down in the box. I thought that was perhaps his inexperience showing.
Yeah, well, that's the point I was trying to get at was that, I mean, there's still a very young defense. Yeah. Omar Toprak is still injured. I mean, Lukas Piszczek is really the only seasoned player that plays in defense at the moment. Marcel Schmelzer doesn't hardly ever plays. So it's very interesting to me that it's interesting to me, I think that's the right word, that Lucien Favre has put so much trust in this young defense, but sometimes it just shows.
Especially in Zagadou, he's moved him in from left back to centre back, and it's worked great on occasions, and he has looked really, really impressive at times. So again, I'm not going to jump on the lad's back straight away, but that was a silly mistake in injury time. Yeah, speaking of left back, Ashraf Hakimi has impressed absolutely hugely, but questions still remain over his discipline in from a defensive point of view. Going forward, very little question. He came close in the first half with an excellent curling effort. And in fact, he should have made it 3-1 in the second half. He was through on goal and really could have finished it off. The same applies to Jakob Brun-Larsen. Had a chance to could have made it 3-1. Yeah, all young players, all impressing brilliantly. But I think this lack of experience, both defensively and offensively, definitely cost Dortmund a couple of points at the weekend.
Yeah, and I do think that you mentioned Hakimi. I really do think that he epitomizes the current Dortmund team in a way, because he's a young player. You can see that he's very passionate. He's very energetic. He runs a lot. He goes forward in every given chance. And that creates a game that could be at times not very tactical and not very ordentlich, as the Germans say. But at the end of the day, that makes a fun watch. That makes a game fun. Yes, that means for Dortmund potentially putting the defense more in danger. That's true. But at the end of the day, I think their offensive powers have been so impressive this season that I think they can calmly count on their attack to provide.
Could Dortmund afford to draw this game? Because it is still early in the season, but Bayern Munich still made up ground on them.
I don't think they could afford to draw it, really, given what's happening elsewhere. We know that Bayern weren't in particularly good form, but they've had a relatively favourable run of fixtures in order to try and get themselves back on track. Wolfsburg away, Mainz away. Haven't they got Freiburg coming up, I think, at some point as well? So
right.
we know
that's next match.
They've got a fourth division team in the Cup, Athens in the Champions League they already had. So we know that Bayern have got relatively easy fixtures to get themselves back in form. So therefore, I think Dortmund could probably have expected that that even if Bayern's performances aren't going to be brilliant, that they would rack up the points to try and draw them in. And especially in hindsight, given the sheer amount of chances that they had against Hertha to wrap up that game, yeah, I think that, yeah, perhaps looking at it harshly, 2 points dropped. And like you said, the gap is now down to 2 points, and they meet in a couple of weeks, don't they?
Yeah. Is it a big deal that they allowed Bayern to get back closer to the top of the table?
I think it's mostly down to Bayern becoming rather stable again in a way, because they haven't been playing well, but they've been getting the results in the Athens game and against Mainz. And I think that will end up putting the pressure on Dortmund. I don't think this particular result is... I don't think they'll rue it in hindsight necessarily in a week or two. But come the end of the season, that's very much possible, because it looks like Bayern are coming back to their rather old selves, a bit without the ability to play convincing football. But they they're doing their job, and that's basically what they need to do at the moment, just gain the confidence back.
So bigger than the Hertha upset, the biggest storyline that came out of this game was what happened in the Hertha end of the tribuna. There was clashes between Hertha fans and police. The kickoff was delayed for a couple minutes, not like 15 minutes like we've seen before, but it was delayed. And if you were watching the game on television, you could barely see the pitch for the first 5 minutes of the game. But Matt, you obviously wrote, you looked at this in more than depth than I think anybody on this podcast. What exactly was the clashes between Hertha fans and police about?
Yeah, I think the best way to start is to describe what exactly happened. The Hertha Berlin fans, or one section of them, a group known as the Hauptstadt Mafia, Capital City Mafia, they call themselves. Well, the Hertha Berlin ultra groups were celebrating their 15th year anniversary on on Saturday. They'd organised a football special train from Berlin to Dortmund. So this was their big day. They'd organised a big display, a big choreography and pyro show in the away end before kickoff, which they went about doing. Lots of smoke, lots of flares, hence the slight delay to kickoff. That went off without any incident, apart from the fact that pyrotechnics are technically illegal and there was smoke all over the pitch, but we see this every single week. After that, the huge banner they had saying 15-year anniversary or whatever it's had, they then laid that in front of the end. And then about 15 minutes into the game, a couple more Hertha fans in the away section also lit a couple of flares, didn't they? At which point the police stationed just next to the away end, or marched in front of the away end in the gap between the pitch, the fence and the first row, and attempted to confiscate this large banner which was lying on the floor. The police reasoning behind that is because the fans have been using that banner to hide under while they put masks on, which they often do to disguise themselves because they know the cameras are watching the away end, and it's to avoid them being identified when they set off pyrotechnics. That's quite common. However, as anybody who sort of followed like ultra culture or fan culture in Germany will know, that an ultra group's banner, whether you like it or not, is considered quite sacred and very precious. And it's the ultimate affront to try and take their banner off them, whether fans or police. And they reacted accordingly, really. And that's when you saw these incidents at the front of the section with the Hertha Berlin ultras jumping out of the section and attacking the police with flagpoles. And also I think they threw one flare at them as well. That led to a huge escalation where I think it all carried on under the stand at half-time as well, where a lot of the Hertha fans then got sort of left the stand and went underneath the stand and then destroyed the toilets and then attacked the police there as well, using broken bits of toilet and toilet doors and various things. I think the first thing that has to be said is that I don't think any of us excuse or would defend lads getting masked up and balaclavaed up and launching bits of toilet and ceramics at the police and attacking them with flagpoles and whatnot, and we don't want to condone violence. On the other hand, I do believe that the way the police went about this was incendiary and led to an escalation, an unnecessary escalation of the situation. As I said, pyrotechnics, they might be illegal, but they are lit every single week in the Bundesliga and across German football, in the stadiums across the country. And the police don't intervene, and they don't intervene for a very good reason, because intervening in a block of anyone, not just football fans, of any group of people, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people, intervening like that is simply dangerous, especially when flares are being lit. It can lead not just to injuries due to the flares, but it can lead to mass panic, it can lead to crushes, and particularly the use of batons and pepper spray in such confined areas is extremely dangerous. So there's a reason why the police in general do not get involved. They leave their investigation to the cameras, which are watching the away end, and they identify people committing illegal activity that way. And that's a safer way to go about it. Just 2 hours later on Saturday, Stuttgart fans did two massive pyrotechnic shows away at Hoffenheim, and the police didn't get involved for the same reason. It is more dangerous to get involved. We see studies come out every single year which prove that there are more people injured by police pepper spray at football matches than by pyrotechnics, as illegal as they may be. That's why I think that the decision by the Dortmund police on Saturday knowing that an attempt to take an Ultra Group's flag off them would lead to an escalation. They must have known that. I thought that was hugely irresponsible, and led to events and, yeah, behaviour from the Kurtha fans, which I then also wouldn't defend either in hindsight either.
Yeah, I think you I was going to say before you said it was we have to draw the line where the actions which we condone. We obviously don't condone the fact that there was toilets broken and there was people attacking police officers. Ideally their mandate of being there was to actually keep people safe. Mm. But at the same time, Felix, Matt brought up a good point that there was no reason for this situation. It seemed like there was no reason for the situation to be escalated. And if it's known that ultra banners are sacred and shouldn't be taken off of fans, then police should be, have that knowledge to know that things will escalate if you try to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there are questions to be asked. First of all, I wanna join what you guys just said. I do not and I will never condone violence and vandalism. That's absolutely out of questions. But in a way, there's a question that needs to be asked. Whose responsibility is it here? When you talk about a situation in which you have thousands of people in a stand doing whatever it is that they're doing, the police needs to make a call based on the situation itself, based on what's the better situation when it comes to people's safety. They must have known. There is no chance in the world that the police in Dortmund, that's so experienced with football fans from all around the world that come to Dortmund for away matches. They're also
With their own fans.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. And I mean, it's with their own fans. It's no questions. I mean, there are questions also. I saw a couple of people on Twitter asking questions as to a couple of weeks before that, there was a neo-Nazi march in Dortmund. A couple of hundred neo-Nazis, if I recall, walked around the city with amounts of pyrotechnics that would put the whole Westfalenstadion on fire. The police just walked by and didn't care. They didn't even stop them. Then they were shouting anti-Semitic chants. So questions are asked in regards to the Dortmund police and the way they go about things when it comes to football fans. And I think that rightly so, because at the end of the day, it's a question of whose responsibility is it to make sure that everyone makes it safe back home. And that responsibility is of the authorities. And I think, as Matt pointed out, the actions of the Dortmund police were counterproductive. They were dangerous. And at the end of the day, in addition to, obviously, if some crimes or illegal actions took place, by all means, investigate it. You have cameras across the stadium. It shouldn't be much of a problem. But coming over and, many people have used the term provoking, but doing something that they knew is going to lead to that is just not on, especially because we expect police to be the bigger person. We don't expect them to act like... we expect them to choose the most fitting solution to the situation, and I don't think that's what they did. Absolutely.
It's also said there were better ways of going about this. This banner was lying on the floor. It wasn't at that precise moment being used to disguise any supporters who were donning masks or setting off flares. There were Hertha Berlin representatives in that end. There were Hertha Fan Project and Ultra representatives in that end who are known to the police. That's the reason they're there. The whole point is that should issues arise, whoever's in charge of the police operation on that day they're the contacts, they're the part, the people that they should go to solve that. They obviously didn't do that. No one in the Hertha then knew that this was going to take place. Suddenly the police suddenly marched out and started trying to take a banner. And unfortunately, it carried on afterwards as well. I mean, the Hertha fans got back to Dortmund Station. Now, if anyone's ever been to Dortmund Main Station, it's quite a narrow concourse down there. Quite shallow roof, narrow walls, and can get quite crowded, especially on a match day with people trying to get trains. I think as a result of what had happened in the ground, the police had then decided that extra measures were required at the station as well, even though there'd been absolutely no problems between the Hertha fans and the Dortmund fans. There's no particular...
Quite the other way around. They supported
Yeah, the other way, exactly. The other way around. The Dortmund fans actually sort of chanting in support of the Hertha fans. They then started erecting more barriers at the station in Dortmund, which led to, quite panicky and potentially dangerous scenes in a packed railway station on a match day in what is actually a relatively small city for such a big football club. And then I saw someone mention it on social media, and I don't think it's too extreme to go back to a tragic event which happened in the same area as Dortmund in Duisburg, at the Love Parade a few years ago, when again due to perhaps less desirable policing measures, several people lost their lives in a tunnelled area where a crush then took place. So it's very quick the way crowds can develop into potentially dangerous situations, and the police must be aware of that, because that could have been a lot worse than just 45 people injured on Saturday.
I just also want to emphasize the point about the pepper spray. I mean, every single one of us that watched the videos saw how, let's call it, freely the police used the pepper spray.
Indiscriminately.
Yeah, indiscriminately is a good term. And I think it's important to talk about the numbers in that sense, because by the police's own admittance last year, as you've mentioned earlier, by the police's own admittance, during the whole of last season, 141 people were injured as a result of the use of pepper spray by the police, whereas only 53 people were injured by pyrotechnics. Those numbers say everything you need to know. At the end of the day, you're talking about a measure that is being applied unfairly, indiscriminately, and in a way that, pepper spray, every one of us that felt what pepper spray feels like, and I have, unfortunately, it can injure you, and apart from being not such a nice feeling, obviously that's the whole point, it can also cause actual injury, especially when sprayed in an irresponsible way. So yeah, bottom line, do investigate, do all the investigations you need, you find someone that did crimes, investigate. But at the bottom line, the responsibility ultimately lies with the police, and we shouldn't forget that.
This is a foreign concept to me, because when I think with a lot of the American listeners that we have, these incidents just don't happen, because there are, in some stadiums in America, there's metal detectors, there are people go through their bags and ask you to open every pocket of your bag, and the police intervene very quickly when there's even a small disturbance in the stadium. What do you say to the argument that these policemen were, by their mandate to try to protect the people from illegal activity, which you said yourself, Matt, that pyrotechnics are illegal. What do you say to the people that these police officers were just doing their jobs?
I think as we've gone through, I think you have to find the balance between tackling illegal activity and the greater safety of 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 football fans in one block. And I think on this occasion, the numbers of injured show where that the side of that balance that you have to come down on. Yes, pyrotechnics are by the letter of the law illegal in German football stadiums. However, as we see week in, week out, they are smuggled into grounds by ultra groups in various ways, and go off with relatively, and especially comparatively, little injury to anyone. They're set off in a relatively controlled way by fans who are quite experienced in using them. Compared to pepper spray, like we said, they cause comparatively little issues to anybody. I think, according to the police report again on Saturday, I think 10 people were treated for the effects of smoke inhalation, whereas a total of 45 were injured by the police intervention. Which again says it all. Yes, these things are illegal. However, they do get in, so we have to be realistic. You are not ever going to stop pyrotechnics being smuggled into grounds. The ultra groups are too well organised for that, and they have their ways of doing it. The use of pyrotechnics is for an ultra group and a legitimate and important expression of the fan culture. So you're not going to stop it. I think up until last year, it was actually legal in Austria, wasn't it? I think they've made it illegal this year. And the argument being that, well, as soon as you make it illegal, that's when you actually make it more dangerous. That's when they have to be ignited under the cover of materials which may even be flammable themselves. So yeah, when you make it illegal, you actually probably make it more dangerous. I think it would be more sensible for everyone to sit down and look at solutions as to how we can go forward with pyrotechnics in stadiums.
So the DFB is looking into this. They have opened an investigation already into this, and they're trying to get both clubs to also look into this. And there was a suggestion also that Germany should return to the practice of playing games in empty stadiums and even eliminating clubs from competitions where fans are, for lack of a better word, unruly. Dynamo Dresden is the most famous example. They were banned from the DFB Pokal. I don't remember exactly when that was, but
2013 or 14 something.
For their fan behavior. Will more stringent measures from the DFB be a solution, or will it be something that will make things worse?
I think it would only make things worse.
Absolutely counterproductive. First of all, when you punish everyone for, there's of course the question if you perceive pyrotechnics are illegal in football stadiums, but if you perceive it to be okay or not, it's just a more general question. The bottom line is that in no way does punishing every single fan in the stadium for the actions of a few, it doesn't work. It just proves not to work every single time in every single country it has been applied, and it's just unfair. And the bottom line is that this sort of punishment, they are one of the things that match-going fans hate the most, that match-going fans get discouraged by the most, and the bottom line is that it does more harm than good. I don't think there's any question about
it. Doesn't
that.
Just do more harm, it actually often doesn't work. One example most recently being the England-Croatia game where fans were technically banned for the actions of Croatia supporters. However, England fans still watched the game from the hill, and I think one got addressed as a steward. A couple of years ago, we had the Dortmund issue when the Südtribüne was closed after the incidents against Red Bull. The Dortmund ultra groups still got in the ground against Wolfsburg because Wolfsburg didn't take their full away allocation. The Dortmund ultras went in the usual away end. They still got in. You simply won't stop football fans from watching a football match. And it's
even if you ban, like you say, some of these few that seems to ruin things for many, many people.
You say ruin.
Well, but, I mean, but ruin maybe not be the right word, but that people want to dissociate from this small group of people. Couldn't you also address the small group of people?
I think it's debatable whether people really want to disassociate themselves from it. I mean, the ultras and the liveliness and the fan of the fan culture that they bring to German football is eagerly jumped upon by the Bundesliga and the DFL in their marketing campaigns. They market the league as, okay, we might not have as much money as the Premier League. The football might not be as good as the Premier League. We might not have like massive rich owners like the Premier League. We might not have Barcelona or Real Madrid like in Spain. But look, we have affordable football, a proper fan culture, and look at these great displays and the fantastic atmosphere in German stadiums. And it's not a lie. And a lot of that is the response. The ultras are to thank for that. I don't really think it's fair. If you asked the majority of match going fans whether ultras or not, whether they go on the terrace or whether they go in the seats or wherever, do you want all the ultras banned? I'd be quite surprised if everyone came back and said yes.
And also, I mean, we need to talk about like it's also a matter of. We also remember what happened when Frankfurt were to play in Marseille and they got banned from the actual city. Such actions they're just very counterproductive. Also, when you take into account the fact that, as Matt said, the fan culture is one of the Bundesliga's unique selling points. Without it, many people would not have been watching the league in the first place and would not have become fans of the league in the first place. So you take that aspect out and you're, I mean, we spoke about this just earlier. You take that out of the equation, and what's left is a league that has sometimes good football, sometimes average football. At the end of the day, apart from Bayern Munich and Dortmund, debatably Schalke, not many people know the clubs here. Not many people are familiar with them. And at the end of the day, you're damaging the league's image, and eventually you're going to damage the league's income. That's the bottom line.
All right, well, let's get to the other big game from the weekend, and that was the 8-goal thriller between Bayer Leverkusen and Werder Bremen. Bayer Leverkusen put 6 past Werder Bremen to reinsert themselves into the Bundesliga season. It seems that they were a little bit floating in the middle of nowhere for a while, but it seems like they've made a statement with their win on Sunday. Matt, you watched this game also very closely. What impressed you most from Leverkusen? There's a lot to take away from this game, but what impressed you the most?
Well, the first thing is it was a fantastic game, and it couldn't have come at a better time. I think Spiegel have called it an advert for the Bundesliga, and I totally agree. It was a great game, and especially because it came on the back of I had to watch Nuremberg against Frankfurt and Red Bull against Schalke as well, and they were two absolutely rubbish games. Never seen worse football in my life, and I've been watching United all season. So yeah, that was a welcome treat, having 8 goals, seeing Leverkusen go 3-0 up by half-time. What did Leverkusen do right? What Leverkusen did right...
No, what were you most impressed with Leverkusen?
Oh, that was that they got right what they're most good at and what we know they're good at. We know they're brilliant going forward. We know that on paper they are probably the most potent and most exciting attack in the league, in Folland, in Havertz, in Brandt, in Bellarabi when he's on form, in Alario when he's on form. We know it's all there. We've seen it on occasions, but only on little occasions. We saw it for 45 minutes against Dortmund when they went 2-0 up. We saw it maybe for 10 minutes away at Dusseldorf when they scored 2. We saw it away at Zorvik in the week for 10 minutes when Bellarabi scored 2, but never for any longer than that. But yeah, it seemed that bar the little 10-minute period where Werder came into it second half and pulled it back to 3-2, we saw Leverkusen piling forward, great pressing in midfield, great transitions, moving it forward quickly, exploiting a few tactical mistakes that Kofeld made, and we'll come on to that later, the Werder Bremen issues. But yeah, we know they can do that. It's just a case of doing it more consistently.
Yeah, Karim Bellarabi has had, after a breakout a few years ago, has kind of regressed a little bit, Felix. But in recent games, he's actually been really, really good. Have you seen something from Bellarabi that would suggest that he deserves more playing time at Leverkusen, even with this all of these potent attacking options?
Yeah, I mean, Bellarabi has certainly been contributing to the Leverkusen attack, which is refreshing. And I think it's a matter of giving him a lot more playtime, and it's a matter of giving him a run in the team, which I think he's going to get after that game against Bremen. And the only question is, will he capitalize in the long term? Because as much as pointed out, Leverkusen has a very, very good attacking squad. When you think about the likes of Leon Bailey on the bench, I mean...
I forgot to mention Bailey in all that.
They have great, great, brilliant quality players coming forward. And it's a matter for Bellarabi to keep it up. Whether he'll do it or not, I mean, consistency was a problem with him before. The question is, will it be this time around? Well, all signs... If we rely on the past, that's probably going to be the case again, but... Who knows? I mean, it's just a matter of getting a run in the team and see how it goes. But it certainly has been promising during the Bremen game. Absolutely.
This game got out of hand rather quickly. And it was in its...
From a Bremen point of view.
From a Bremen point of view, definitely. How seriously do you take this result? Is this how much of a statement did Bayer Leverkusen make?
It's a huge statement for Heiko Herrlich, wasn't it? Obviously, he was under pressure.
Although there were some, I think Sky did still question whether Heiko Herrlich was going
to. Yeah, which led to yet another amusing rant from Rudy Fuller. I think rant number 582 or something from our Rudy. In which, what did he say? He said it was completely unacceptable.
Sauerei.
Is that what he said? Yeah. Sauerei, right? That had a massive go at Sky for questioning Heiko Herrlich after what Rudy Fuller described as a tactically brilliant performance, 6-2, I think. Yeah, okay, yeah, we can say that. And yeah, Herrlich did react well in the second half after Kofeld had switched Bremen around and gone back to four at the back. I thought Leverkusen switched around as well quite well, kept up that pressure. All credit to Kai Havertz there as well. Absolutely outstanding individual performance once again from him. But yeah, big result for Herrlich. Should definitely relieve some of the pressure on him a little bit. I think despite all the denials coming out, I think we're all quite obvious that Leverkusen did make contact with Ralf Hasenhüttl, mm-hmm. who I still think personally would, in the long term, could be a more rounded solution. Better solution for Leverkusen than Herrlich, who I think still has big questions over him as to how he can set up that defence. Although we know they're still missing of the Baumgartlinger and Charles Aranguiz in midfield, which doesn't help. I was a bit worried before kickoff the game on Sunday. I thought Kai Havertz would once again be dropping back into a deeper role, which I absolutely hate seeing. I know it's necessary sometimes because they're short on players midfield, but I hate seeing him down there because I think he's wasted. But it wasn't actually the case. They were operating with four or five forwards sometimes at Leverkusen. So yeah, really impressive. Should reduce the pressure. But they've got a couple of tough games coming up. Gladbach in the cup in the week, which could be a quite open game. We'll get to that.
But I want to get to Werder Bremen first because. Again, this was a game that kind of, like I just said, it just got out of hand for them, Felix.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, you've asked whether this game was a statement. I think it was. It could be a statement for Leverkusen, depends what's going to happen next, but it's definitely, I think it's going to be taken with a pinch of salt when it comes to Werder Bremen and their fans, because they've been great this season so far. Mm-hmm. And this game, as you've mentioned, sometimes it was weird. Some of the mistakes, I mean, Pavleka making such mistakes, it's just unheard of almost.
Yeah. Well, we also have to keep in mind that Niklas Mosander was injured, and you have Marco Friedl, who Florian Kohfeldt did defend after the game, but he's... I mean, a young player on loan from Bayern Munich.
I thought he got. I felt sorry for him. He got ridiculously exposed. He was up against Bellarabi, who just kept running and running and running at him. I think at times it was 3-on-3 or even 3-on-4 in Leverkusen's favour. And so I did feel sorry for Marco Friedl there at the back.
Yeah, but I mean, at the end of the day, when it comes to Werder Bremen, I don't think they'll be too excited or too downhearted by this loss. It was a one-off game when it comes to the performances of so many of their players, and not in a good way, of course. I mean, Langkamp scoring two own goals. It was just a weird game for many reasons for them. And given how Kohfeldt knows how to learn from his mistakes, we've seen that last season. And we've seen it this season as well, because they keep on improving. And I really do feel like Florian Kohfeldt's going to get it right and gonna learn from that game. It was just a weird game for them, and I don't think that's anything for us to learn from for the remainder of the season.
I was watching a few of the comments from the Bremen fans after the game match, and they were saying pretty much echoing your thoughts, Felix. They're not particularly worried. I think they all seem to think, yeah, Kohfeldt got it wrong today, but we're not going to read too much into it. Kohfeldt himself admitted as much. He said afterwards, yeah, we forgot the most important aspect of football today, and we left ourselves open on the counter time and time again, and it really could have been like 5-0 or 6-0 by half-time. So I think he knows that. Obviously, injury issues. Bagfried is still out as well. It's always a big loss for them. Mm-hmm. I would not worry. Good fixture coming up. They've got Mainz away coming up, Freiburg away coming up, Gladbach at home. All winnable fixtures for them, and they'll get back at home will be tough, but should be a good game. Just like the mm-hmm. Leverkusen Gladbach game in the cup, they'll be good games without a doubt. Yeah. I've got no worries about Bremen despite shipping six.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that Leverkusen Gladbach game in the cup, because we are going to get to more cup discussion by popular demand later. But it's that's a pretty big showcase now. I mean, once that fixture came out back in August, it didn't seem like it was going to be that enthralling, and it's not like a Bayern Munich Dortmund, but both of these teams now, Leverkusen coming off of this victory, and even though Gladbach got smashed on Friday by Freiburg, they have beat some impressive sides so far this season. So what do we see from that game?
Really, really open game. I wouldn't say Gladbach got smashed by Freiburg. I thought Freiburg had a very, very disappointing...
Well, they lost 4-1.
3-1, and one of them was a 90-second goal
from the halfway line.
So it wasn't a complete smashing. I thought Freiburg were really, really disciplined, and yeah, Gladbach have been impressive in recent weeks, but just didn't have quite as much on the break as they normally do. Yeah, I think we can look forward to an open game. Unlike Leverkusen, neither Bremen or Gladbach have got any European commitments, so they'll be going into that with relatively fresh squads. Game to look forward to.
Yeah, I mean, also when it comes to both teams and their performances over the weekend and in the last couple of weeks, we can expect a very attacking game, very open game. And when you're talking about Gladbach and Leverkusen, you're talking about two teams that have the players going forward and have the quality to make things happen when it comes to their attacking abilities. Let's just hope they're going to leave their defenses home, which is very likely given how both teams looked recently. And we're going to have a fun game. I really do believe that.
All right, let's get to our Shot from Rosette section. Thank you all again for voting. Remember, you can vote every week for one of the topics that we talk about and on the podcast. And this week, by popular demand, like I've said throughout the podcast, we're talking about the second round of the German Cup. It's back after 2 months. Some interesting fixtures at the Bundesliga level. But what we're going to do instead is since it's the second round, we're going to each pick our upset, the upset that we think is most likely to happen in the second round. So Matt, since you wanted to talk so much about the German Cup, why don't you pick the one matchup that you think could see an upset?
Well, if you're going to go for upsets, you have to obviously look at the lowest ranked teams that are left in it. We've got three Division 4 teams, haven't we? Weiche Flensburg are playing Werder Bremen, Rödinghausen are playing Bayern, and this is the one, Ulm. Who are they playing?
Düsseldorf.
There's also a fifth division team, isn't there? Got one team from the fifth division, Chemie Leipzig. And that, for me, they've got Paderborn at home. They've already beaten Regensburg. Division 2 or 3, Regensburg?
Regensburg 2.
2. So they've already beaten one Division 2 team at home, last minute winner.
Paderborn in the third division last
Paderborn
season.
Have been, well, they've been in every division, haven't they, over the past few years? Yeah. They've been up and down like an elevator. Another Division 2 team. Probably a better team than Regensburg, I think. This is the team that put 5 past FC Cologne recently in Division 2. But yeah, that if I was going to go for one, given the surroundings in the Alfred Kunze Sportpark in Leipzig, I think that could be an interesting one. I would not be overly surprised if Chemie Leipzig on that pitch nicked one.
Felix, what's your upset pick?
I'm actually going to go for Ulm against Düsseldorf just by the fact that Düsseldorf are not looking very well recently. And I think that's exactly the sort of games that could create a surprise. But just coming back to Chemie Leipzig, I mean, it's such a fantastic club. A great story behind it as well, because the Alfred Kunze Sportpark basically doesn't have floodlights, which was problematic because the game is going to be played in the evening. It was a big issue. Chemie Leipzig asked the DFB to agree to an earlier kickoff. They didn't agree, which basically forced Chemie Leipzig, a fifth division club, very low on resources, to bring in temporary floodlights all the way from Bolton, England. It cost the club 100.
Is that where they've come from?
Yeah.
Bolton.
Yeah. Your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And basically, it cost the club 100,000 euros, a lot of money for a fifth division club. But it's a great story.
That's a player.
Yeah. And
that's a couple of players.
It's not even a player. I think half of them are playing for free, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, they have other jobs and stuff like that. And I think I've just received photos from the first training under floodlights. ever in the Alfred Kunze Sportpark. More than 1,000 fans attended this training. It looks absolutely amazing, and the atmosphere is going to be bouncing. Also important to mention that Chemie Leipzig's season has been great so far. They've only drew the last match, but other than that, they've won every single game they played this season. Fifth league football, we all know that, and they've just been relegated from the Regionalliga Nord-Ost. But they are confident. They come into the game thinking, we've got nothing to lose. The same thing as the Regensburg game. And there is a lot of potential for an upset there, definitely.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, the one you picked was Ulm. I mean, they beat the defending German Cup champions, Frankfurt. So Düsseldorf should be rather easy for them.
Be a tough one. Another one we haven't mentioned yet. Nuremberg were away at Hansa Rostock. Yeah. Rostock, of course, beat Stuttgart.
Well, let me get to mine.
Round. Oh, sorry. Go
I'm going to go to. I'm going to do a bit more high profile.
Rödinghausen.
No, I'm going to go. I think Union Berlin has a decent chance of upsetting Dortmund.
Ooh.
Now, I know that Dortmund have been playing really well. We talked about them, obviously, earlier in the podcast. But I don't know what it is against second-division teams. I mean, it happened under Thomas Tuchel. It also happened after a year.
Didn't Union take Dortmund to penalties?
Yes, they did.
That was only a
couple of years ago. I mean, I haven't checked who is available for Borussia Dortmund. Of course, that depends on everything. But Lucien Favre, I think, he has not put out a B team. If he does so against Union, I think that would be a grave mistake, because like Borussia Dortmund, Union Berlin are also unbeaten on the season, in third place in the second division. I think that would be a very interesting game for a neutral to watch. And I think you might be a little bit more surprised with how well Union Berlin stay in that game.
Could be an interesting one. They'll bring good support as well. Maybe not the, 14,000 they brought two years ago. I don't think it would quite be that many this time. But there'll be a good support behind them. Yeah, like you said, Davis, I think that them and Dortmund are the only two professional teams remaining unbeaten in German football this year. So.
Yeah, you said Abwehr Chemnitz as well. They were in the third division last year. We don't know if they're still professional or if they have to move to semi-professional.
I'm not sure if they're professional, insolvent. I'm not quite sure what they're doing. I'm pretty sure they're unbeaten though, but we'll see how that goes. Union's an interesting one. They and San Pauli both had chances to go top of Division 2 at the weekend after Cologne drew and Hamburg won. They beat Magdeburg on Friday night, didn't they? So both Union and San Pauli had a chance to go top, and then in typical Division 2 fashion, shout out to the Bundesliga 2 fans out there, San Pauli went and lost at home to Kiel, I think, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
And so Union drew 0-0 with 10-man Dynamo Dresden. Yeah. So, yeah, that is Division 2 all over.
And, I mean, just one thing about that Union Dortmund game, speaking of the Dortmund police, the Dortmund police just tweeted that the fans should come in early due to extra security measures. We're talking about a 6:30 kickoff in midweek.
And Berlin is obviously on the opposite side of the country.
500 kilometers away or something. Again, goes back to the same point. Dortmund police... Yeah,
completely detached from reality.
Yeah,
I don't have any tactical reason for giving Union the tip here. Only just that they've, I mean, it's more about Borussia Dortmund than it actually is about anything else. I mean, Greuther Fürth, who is also playing well in Division 2, also did extremely well against Dortmund in the first round. So it's just one of those things that you just don't know. But why wanted to mention Hansa Rostock? So
yeah, only because I went to the first round against Stuttgart, and the game sold out again up on the northeast coast. And anyone who's seen any pictures or videos of Hansa Rostock supporters, they're on a different level altogether, I think, aren't they? And so it'll be another absolutely bouncing atmosphere in the Ostseestadion. And Nuremberg, that wasn't like to before, that was an awful game at the weekend against Frankfurt. They did take the lead with 12 minutes to go, and I think had they held on before Sebastian Aller's 92nd minute equaliser, they would have been going into this Hansa Rostock game with a lot more confidence. And even though they are two divisions above them, I would not bet against Hansa Rostock turning up with that support behind them.
Also a long way for Nuremberg as well.
Is this the longest trip in the cup?
No, Holstein-Kiel-Freiburg.
Yeah,
Kiel-Freiburg.
To basically the two ends of the country.
Yeah.
And that's a fixture?
Yeah.
That's a fixture.
Wow. Kiel to Freiburg.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, we also have to bear in mind that Nuremberg is away form is really not very good.
That's true.
And given the atmosphere at the Oststadion, I mean, it's going to be an upset, but it definitely has the potential to be, like, if you need to pick one game that it has the most potential to create an upset, it's probably this one.
Cologne-Schalke.
Yeah.
That's the one I'm going to. So
likewise.
All right, last question before we get out of here. I said this off air, and I think you guys already know your answers, but which fan choreo are you looking forward to the most?
Either Hansa Rostock or Chemie Leipzig.
Chemie Leipzig, hand down. I have all sorts of friends there. They'll be angry at me if I won't say it, but it's going to be bouncing there. Not even in question.
All right, that'll do it for this week's Tribune Weekly. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, and if you do, please leave us a friendly review. You can also like our Tribune Podcast page on Facebook, and also follow us on Twitter at Tribune Podcast. And remember to always watch out for our Shout from Rosette poll every week. You can follow Matt Ford on Twitter at Matt_4D, Felix Tomzet at FTomzet, and I'm at Davis_VanOptor. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.